been a pleasure talking about the World Cup, guys. Really appreciate it.
Lost Armenians in Fermoy has the absolute bang of a 6-part documentary on Netflix.
That's a bad ball.
This is the worst group of players that any manager has had in my lifetime.
We should have gone to Greece and put in a performance and got a result, and we didn't. There was no performance there.
Pretty much the first time after a Stephen Kenny managed Ireland performance that I have felt I have no ammunition to go to war with here.
That report said that Powell had shamed players for their weight and attempted to exert excessive control over eating habits. That's what it was claimed.
That's all I want to say. We are going to a World Cup. We have done phenomenally with this team, and we would have never been able to do that if our bond with each other would have been so strong and so positive.
Ireland is back in the World Cup. It's just an awesome feeling to think where they have come from to arrive here. Also brought down, and it's a penalty to Australia.
No chance.
No chance for Brazil. Super penalty for Brazil. And Australia lead 1-0. And it's disappointment for Ireland at the start of this World Cup, and huge belief for Australia.
Why would we change? If Katie McCabe says that she wants to change, it doesn't mean she's not the coach, eh?
Another inviting ball in there on the crossbar. Is it?
Nice to score and get us off to a good start, but it's the results that matter at this level.
Ireland's first World Cup point, Ireland's first World Cup clean sheet, but Ireland's adventure is over.
I just felt the players drifting away, then I found out that behind my back all things were happening.
As expected, Vera Pauw is no longer the manager of the senior Ireland women's team.
The results and performances that we got were in spite of their being our coach.
State funding for the FAI has been suspended after Sport Ireland spotted a couple of issues with the pay to the CEO, Jonathan Hill.
And a need a goal! The Republic of Ireland lead the Netherlands. Dumfries in around the back.
Under an in-depth review of the campaign in its entirety, the board will then meet to consider this review and next steps.
Of course, it's going to go up somewhat.
There is a bright future now with this team, and the players are only going to get better. It's been an amazing journey, first with the under-21 team and the last 3 years with the senior team. It's been a great privilege.
Hello and happy Christmas. I'm David Snaid, and welcome to what will be a special two-part football family to draw 2023 to a close for Irish football. So special, in fact, that Mr. Shane Geegan has agreed to drop in for the next hour and a half after coming up to Dublin to sort his Christmas shopping. Joining us in studio is also Gavin Cooney, who has a far more enjoyable afternoon ahead of him, as he will soon be heading over to Kildare Street this afternoon for the FAI's visit to the Oireachtas Sports Committee. Gavin was also at the FAI's AGM last weekend at a time when Irish football governance is once again under the microscope. But those woes are just some of the issues at the heart of the game in this country. In the first part of this special pod, over the next 40 minutes or so, we will discuss the current landscape for Irish football in terms of that political situation both inside and outside FAI HQ, and how the facility investment vision and strategy plan that was unveiled back in June is likely to take a back seat over the coming weeks as the fallout from that visit to the committee takes place. Several members of the FAI board are expected to appear before the committee to answer questions about government issues, but equally as important is the player development plan, and it is impossible not to draw a link between the investment plan that is so badly required and the need for facilities, as well as the coaching and player progression in this country. FAI Director of Football Mark Canham has been working on that plan over the course of this year, and he's also been fairly busy with other managerial business these last few weeks. So where does it stand now, and what can it achieve? In part two, we will get stuck into the enjoyable light relief of the football. Even the tremendously successful women's team, who had appeared at a first ever World Cup, have not been immune to drama. Vera Depauw was replaced after a post-World Cup review, and that search for a new boss is likely to be concluded in the next few days. So we're going to hold off on our chat with Emma Duffy until later in the week to get a full picture of where Ireland are at heading into 2024. By February of next year, Jonathan Hill, the FAI CEO, has indicated that he does want a new men's manager appointed once the draw for the Nations League campaign has been made. We will discuss the year that was, the positives and the negatives, and how, if even, 2024 can get better. Not to mention laying out exactly where we are, 60th as per FIFA's latest world rankings, and how we can get better. So, lads, nice easy questions to end the year. Well, here we are, lads. It's a week before Christmas and we're currently in the three stages of COVID lockdown. Gavin, Mr. Gavin Cooney is in his lovely best men's wear suit. I like to think I'm in a nice three quarter zip top and a nice pair of jeans. Shane Keegan in his gym and coffee hoodie and trackie.
Gone full cash.
I heard you were wearing it on Bondi Beach, just back from Australia.
Too warm over in Bondi. No, I was on the other side of Australia anyway, over the port side. But 40 degrees, trust me, to land out into the hottest November they've had in the last 20 years.
Yeah. You survived it.
I survived it. I enjoyed it, every bit of it. My wife only does white and red as two colours, but I like a bit of sun now. Small bit of a colour, well hidden underneath the layers of clothes that you have to get back to used to wearing fairly quickly when you get back here, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. As I laid out in the intro, we are going to be getting stuck into a fair bit over the next little while. But this is the fourth time we've actually all been together for a while. I think me and Gav spoke after the New Zealand game, which I had to double check the score.
Yeah, 1-0. If in doubt, guess 1-0.
But there has been so much that has happened in Irish football, even in the space of the time that we were chatting. Like Gav, even with this, you were at the AGM at the weekend. For people who won't have been paying too much attention to it, or even just getting a sense of why it's important, especially coming into the Oireachtas Committee, which is the reason why you're wearing that suit today, what came out of the AGM at the weekend that is of significance for the next couple of years?
Yeah, so the main thing is that they're going to achieve their gender balance on the board. So they voted to change the rules as necessary to add another two directors to the board, both of whom will be female. So that'll happen in January. So that means they'll get a minimum of 40% female representation on the board, which means that they'll salvage half their state funding. That was the main thing. And then the other thing to come out of it was a few answers to questions as to what happened with Jonathan Hill's pay. Obviously, we learned a few weeks ago that his pay was €20,000 above the permitted threshold under the terms of the state bailout. He's not allowed to earn more than a secretary general of a government department. An audit found that actually he was €20,000 above it. That's because of benefit in kind on travel and accommodation expenses, and then cash that he was given in lieu of holiday days that weren't taken. And it was that latter point that was really kind of subject to intense scrutiny at the AGM. The former chairman Roy Barrett didn't have to go along because he's quit, but he did come along to explain himself. He stood up before.
Well, he had to, didn't he?
Yeah.
Let's be honest, he had to go.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't have to go as chairman, but he had to go to answer the questions. He could have dodged it, I suppose, but he chose not to, which is admirable in its own way. But yeah, he stood before the room and answered questions around his holiday pay, and he said he was the one who granted it in exceptional circumstances because he just couldn't take the holiday pay because of COVID and because of personal circumstance. And he took full responsibility for it. He didn't apologise for it because he says he believes it was the right decision. It was done to incentivise and motivate and retain senior staff like the CEO. And I thought that was reasonable enough. But the problem was that he didn't bring the issue to the board straight away. He did pass it on to the remuneration committee of the FAI, on which a couple of independent board members sit. But the whole of the board weren't aware.
He didn't get blue ticked on. What was the actual vibe like at the AGM? Like, I've covered AGMs in the John Delaney era where media are ushered in a separate entrance.
Yeah.
I remember at one point, I can't remember the hotel, but getting filled in a separate function room, like away from away from everyone, kept away, couldn't be chatting to anyone. And almost in darkness.
Yeah.
So what was it like at the weekend?
It's way better. Just to finish on Bart, by the way, because there is one other point to make about it that's, I think, is going to kind of become the main focus of the Oireachtas Committee stuff, is that he didn't bring it to the full board until later in the year when it was clear that there was an issue with it. after his board Ireland did their audit and suspended state funding. He said partly he didn't want to bring it to the board because he didn't know the full story, and partly because he didn't want it to leak. You know, this is so. I think that would it have leaked from the board? I think yes, it would. That's faultless logic, but that's not a reason not to bring it. You know, address the leaking rather than that fact. So that's not great, actually, to be quite honest. And it's, I know it's a bland phrase, but it's not good corporate governance, and that's the kind of stuff that got the FAI into this mess. It's not comparable with some of the shit that went on previously, but it's still not, you know, it's still not best practice, and that's what the FAI need to do. In terms of the AGM as a whole, Barrett then gave this kind of amazing valedictory speech as to, he railed against the culture of leaking on the board, and then said our biggest problem at holding Irish football back is not this payments problem, it's not anything else, it's that a few people in this room believe that their own politicking and their own positions of power are more important than the health of the game itself. Which is
hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and it got very.
You're nodding your head.
He got. He walked out of the room then. Like nobody applauded. Someone shouted up that he was giving us a lecture. I think another person said it'll take time to mend the bridges that you've burned, and walked out of the room. But then a couple of delegates came over to the journalists in the corner of the room to say that what Roy Barrett said there was the most important thing that will be said today. So, look, I mean, he was talking to the people whom he thinks privileged their own positions of power above the health of the game were in front of him. So they were hardly going to applaud. But
25 years or so from grassroots up to the top tells me, like, that's hitting the nail on the head. He's absolutely hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Like, there's stuff from my vantage point where you look and go, you know, is there not an obvious solution to this? There seems a really obvious solution to this. You lay out the obvious solution and then you find out, well, that can't happen because it doesn't suit one particular individual. And therefore the whole thing just gets shot down.
Yeah.
And doesn't that even tie in with the fact in the first place of when the people thought the gender quota was getting shot down, but it wasn't even that. It was the case that people on the football side of things and different grassroots didn't want the even balance of independent directors on the board.
That was it, yeah. It was never about gender balance, they'll say. They wanted to, rather than add one football director and one independent director to the board, which would retain the even split under the terms of the state bailout agreement. Now, they made the point, and it was made from the floor of the AGM, that agreement is out at the end of this year. So they're like, why can't we adapt? Like, you know, we'll technically be in breach of it for a minute or whatever. So why would the state be bothered about that? But the minister has apparently told the FAI that any condition of future funding, we're going to have to retain this even split rather than go an 8-6 split. So that's why that happened. And yeah, that was perceived in some quarters, is that demanding the 8-6 split was certainly the amateur side of the game kind of fighting for more power. A couple of them would use this phrase, take back control. Barrett did address that phrase in his speech. He said, take back control from whom? You know, so, but like, I think a lot of people will be sympathetic with Barrett's speech, but it was kind of undermined by the fact that it was also, while he was standing there, he had just before explained his rationale for not telling the board about this thing because it would leak, and that's not right either. So you've got this little story about Hill, and that's kind of the wider story, isn't it? That this because the FAI are kind of on probation, and much worse has happened at the FAI, you could say much worse has happened at other sporting bodies than this €20,000 payment that has been repaid. And it's not right that it happened, but in the wider scheme of things, it's kind of small, but then that overshadows everything. Like, and we'll go to this Oireachtas committee thing today, and they're meant to present their infrastructure plan, but sure, they won't get much time to voice it. There'll be questions about the payments.
And look, a big part of it for me, and I'm obviously not as well versed in it, so maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, but like, did one of the issues seem to be that it is an FAI policy that you can't be remunerated for your
holidays? It's in the handbook, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's in the handbook. Yeah.
And like, I know we're going to talk a bit further about, you know, what does Irish football need to do over the next few years to try and get us, you know, back to a reasonably competitive level. Well, one of the biggest things we need is that we need the FAI staff at the forefront of driving the various different initiatives that they feel can have a positive impact on in football in the country. How motivated and how, you know, driven are the staff to go and do things like that when, look, been quite honest about it, I would regularly come into conversation with FAI staff well down the pecking order, and like, motivation levels aren't good, and this is a blow on top in a situation where motivation levels already aren't good.
Yeah.
I think it just strikes another blow and you know, probably deteriorates motivation levels among staff even further.
But it's also where it's impossible to to have this discussion where it's not interlinked, where in terms of we're talking about the political situation, like, you, obviously, Gav, you're going to be going to rock this. So we'll be seeing later on, and it's going to actually come out in the next couple of days of how that goes. But it's also very clear that politically, even within the FAO and within those structures, that there's serious issues. But if you go back to when the funding was halted by the government and when it first came out about the overpayment, like what you're saying, like straight away I'm getting messages from people who are involved in coaching, and there's like courses might not be getting put on. Like, will they actually be able to increase the number of coaches that are in the country? And people thinking, well, will they actually have a job? Will people be losing their jobs? Because it wasn't so long ago under the last regime where obviously there was a combination of, say, pay cuts, but other than people leaving the association because of that. So we're talking, yeah, you can't at this point have a conversation about, well, what's the future in terms of football, and we'll get into what was laid out in the investment facilities plan and all the rest of it. And you can be sure that the FAO they were very kind of vocal earlier in the summer, and they were for the time, even with the whole Greyhound stuff. Now they're on the defensive.
Yeah.
And they're on the defensive on the basis of partially because of what Barrett did.
Yeah.
And like, he has to take a serious amount of responsibility for that, because you're dead right. Compared to some of the figures previously, it is minuscule, but it's the point of it. It's the principle of the fact that, like what you said there about the FAO being on probation, not that they have to be seen to be whiter than white, they just have to be seen to be doing things correctly.
Yeah.
And not correct for that, something like that, to just be withheld from people on the basis that it would leak. If it leaks, not that so be it. That's something you have to change bit by bit over in terms of a culture. But you're not going to change that then by keeping more stuff from people.
Yeah. On the point of how it actually got to the point of being paid, Gav, I assume we don't know the ins and outs of whether Hill came to Barrett saying, listen, I've got outstanding holiday pay or holidays there, I need some remuneration. Well, or whether Barrett came to Hill and said, listen, you've got outstanding
holidays. This is the frustrating thing about it. And this is what Hill wouldn't fully get into and admit to in the press conference afterwards. And that's I kind of would see this as obviously this shouldn't have happened, but it's a venial sin in the wider scheme of things. I think it's just, and there's a summary document of the audit that's been submitted to the committee and I read last night, and it's all kind of complex stuff about tax treatments, and it's complicated by the fact that how much you pay to revenue in Ireland and how much goes to HMRC in the UK because he's commuting from over there, and it's all very complicated. And then sorry, I've completely lost my train of thought.
I'd just like to, this is completely aside, but my lack of a journalism background means regularly after our podcast, I have to Google at least four of Gav's words. So venial.
I'm the same.
Venial has just been added to the list. Can we Google venial there?
I thought there was a disease. Is there not venial diseases? But the point is, like what you're saying there, Gav, and I know you're that point of, you know, things can be complicated, tax and all the rest of it, but the nuts and bolts of it are very simple. And again, it plays into why that atmosphere would have been tense, is the fact that something like this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Like, I know you were reporting, basically, because the simple way of summing up is that when the FAO signed up to a state bailout in 2020, it was agreed that the CEO's remuneration would not exceed that of a Secretary General of a government department.
Yeah.
And I know, obviously, the part of the issue with this is that those kind of benchmarks have increased Wild Hill, and that's part of...
That's
of
complicated, what, of, yeah.
That's paid in, but...
And they also Hill's remuneration is something was what 282,000 or something in the per the accounts last year. That includes like a pension and benefits allowance paid by the FAI. The Secretary General thing doesn't include their pension, and the FAI thought that their pension is they reckon it's 39%, by the way, of their annual salary, which is absolutely whopper. So they thought they were well within it.
I read that and I was thinking there's a decimal point missing there.
I've now found my train of thought, and to answer your question, the frustrating thing about it is, do we know if Jonathan Hill went and asked for this? Yeah. He didn't admit to that. It was very passive language. Barrett, before the delegates, said that the executive, like members from the executive, so that's the senior leadership team, came to him about it, and then this was identified. And Jonathan Hill didn't explicitly admit that he was the one who went and asked for it. Okay. Maybe he didn't. Maybe, like, I asked him, and was like, well, is this some kind of benevolent colleague of you that was counting your holiday days and then realised you were short? And he didn't really admit to that either. So that's kind of, I think we might actually get, the politicians might do a better job than I did in terms of getting an answer to that. But Hill's probably, you know, there's various opinions out there on the job that he's done. He's quite defensive of the job he's done. He was definitely massively backed by Barrett and the FAI board in recent years, to the point that he got a pay rise at the start of this year.
I bet you both went checking the 42 handbook to see if you get paid for your holidays not taken, did you?
I don't want to discuss that in front of Gav in case he's on a different. But like the reason why as well this the reason why this is important is because the fallout to this is that state funding was stopped, right? And we're now in. But first of all, there's going to be an Oireachtas committee today where they're supposed to be properly. It was supposed to be not investigating, but discussing the facility investment vision and strategy plan, which the FAI released in June. We'll get into that because that's a big part of this section, which obviously you'll know well about. And obviously, Gav, in terms of like just that was it kind of struck me as something that was very bold from the FAI at that point to do, to be laying out and saying, well, this is what's actually needed. Like in you said as well, Gav, that like basically the FAI saying football has been underfunded for 20 odd years.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's important is because obviously they were breaking the kind of conditions of the was it the memorandum of understanding.
Yeah.
So like if you look at if you go back to say in June again of why I think this is important is because they're going into the Oireachtas today and rather than being able to put forward a proper assessment of where Irish football is at and lay it out exactly. Like you were at the PFAI Awards and the minister was there whose name now excuse me, Thomas Byrne,
he was at the Soccer Writers as well.
And like
it's at both, yeah.
Yeah. So what you call it, probably not ideal. I was not at either of those events, but obviously just anyway, we won't get into that. But it was very telling, even just from reading some reaction of how like I know listening to Brendan Clark's speech and he laid it out. And it did seem to register. Like with him, you were in the room, but it did seem to register with him that he wasn't just brushing it off, and he did seem to be a little bit affected by it.
Yeah, he did. Look, he went about combating Clarkey's remarks very well. First of all, well done to Clarkey. You know, quite often somebody just stands up and makes that just ticks the requisite boxes and you sit back down and everybody gives you a round of applause and there's no more to be said about it. Clarkey actually decided to try and talk about stuff that he thought could have an impact, particularly knowing that the minister was sitting in front of him. I often feel sorry for politicians, like to a certain extent, in that, you know, what can he say under circumstances like that? He had to get back up and had to try and say, look, we have plans in place. Now, he did fight a little bit back. He did mention the fact that the funding that they had received in previous years and that he felt that football needed to get its own house in order a little bit better in terms of how to make the applications for funding, which, to be fair, is definitely a problem.
That's
in football circles.
Capital equipment problem. Yeah.
Like if I just literally look at in my... you know, my local town in the Arse End of Laois, if I look at how many applications my local soccer club, a small soccer club have played and how strong those applications maybe were in terms of how they were put together as opposed to my local hurling club and how strong those applications were put together, you know, I'll be honest, one to blow the other out of the water. And that probably is the case right around the country.
And just on that, just to make this point before interrupting, but it's important on that is that, and this is actually in the investment plan, in the investment kind of document that was put out, and it's very interesting, is that obviously say 55% of clubs in Ireland don't own their own facilities, right? And then half of leases are for less than 15 years, meaning that 25% of clubs throughout the country cannot apply for government funding because you need to have leases that are for a longer period. So like that's partly because like, if you can link that to the lower turn in the sports capital and equipment programme, because from the turn of the century from 2000 up until last year, football received 188 million euro, whereas the GAA managed 431 million euro. And it sounds grim even having to pit that against each other, but that's just the nature of how this programme is that it naturally does pit sport. And not to kind of single out a person, but you saw it from one politician when a sport from a different code gets up to 10 million euro for a stadium and they were producing a video on social media saying, I was able to do this.
Yeah.
That's not how it should be.
Oh, no.
And that is part of the issue in terms of how, and 100% you're
right. That's politics.
But how do you think clubs, and you see it there about the leases and not even clubs not having long enough, but like even the fact that like 10% lack access to an indoor facility. You know, 43% of pitches were rated as very poor or moderate by clubs. Like, how can clubs help themselves? If you were saying, well, how would you think they can help themselves?
Are you talking about grassroots level or the top end? Well, because it's a massive problem at both ends.
How would you assess it? Like, in terms of from your own experience of it from both, how would you assess it?
Yeah, I actually don't think it's as big an issue at the grassroots level as I do at the top end, to be honest with you. Most, look, obviously, I'm in Laois, but we actually play in the Kilkenny District. My local club will play in the Kilkenny District League. And I'm back, you know, managing my young lads under nines. And most places we go, facilities are decent. You know, they're both in terms of change of facilities, both in terms of grass pitches, small-sided astro pitches, that kind of stuff. They're not bad, by and large. And then you've got a couple, I think I might have spoken about it before, you've got a couple of clubs who then really get their act together. I mean, Evergreen Football Club would be the biggest soccer club in Kilkenny. Yeah. They've got two full-size, fully floodlit astro pitches. I mean, there's not a League of Ireland club in the country who could get close to that, bar maybe Rovers, in terms of the setup they have out at their place. Like, that's, you know, absolutely fantastic facilities to have. But then I'm down at Cove Ramblers, where, you know, we've
not
got...
Not no.
We, well,
for we'll least, get into that later.
For the last while, I've been down at Cove Ramblers, where we have a pitch that is, you know, atrocious, let's be honest. You know, we got regular warnings from the FAI over how poor the pitch was. We got regular warnings from the FAI over...
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Floodlights, there was a big argument, there was a consistent argument with Mark, not to be hanging Mark out, but Mark had to hit me once or twice to try and put pressure on the board to try and solve the floodlights. Apparently, I didn't...
It's Mark Scanlon. Analysis.
Mark Scanlon, I get on reasonably well with Mark, but our floodlights apparently weren't strong enough, or there was a couple of bulbs missing or something like this. And these are the kind of things that you're fighting over, like, you know? Yeah. Now, not to go off on a complete tangent, but say our board knew that come the end of the season. So our whole pitch has been ripped up and been changed to an astro. I still say Cove's whole pitch has been ripped up and been changed to an astro. So the board were like, well, why would we redo the whole floodlights when we're putting in an entire new system at the end of the year? But anyway, like, we have no training facilities, absolutely none. So everything where we look to train is rented. Now, you can make an argument that Cove as a club is well down the pecking order, okay? But exactly the same situation applied when I was the Galway United manager. Galway United have zero of their own facilities.
But sure, Pats won the FAI Cup and they're renting Abbottstown.
In Abbottstown, yeah. And then also even part of that is that they had to almost fight to get that. Like, it wasn't as if the FAI were handing out and saying, listen, this is available. Like, the FAI almost went around them to go and get that because they had been renting Ballyulster's training pitch for the last number of years.
And you're completely at the mercy then of those kinds of clubs. Like, you know, I would regularly have had an argument with some of the staff up at Merview that, lads, like, you didn't cut the grass short enough because, you know, and you're reliant on, you know, you turn up for training on a Monday morning and you're hoping that club have decided to cut the grass, you know?
And like, that's what kind of scares me about the future, to be honest, because it's quite obvious that, you know, we need to develop... You always hear football industry, that's always the phrase. But, like, we need to develop proper academy facilities and training 100%. Facilities because that's going to be the plan.
Yeah. Like, and supporters want improved stadium facilities.
Yeah.
And I understand that. Of course they do. And they're right to bat for what they want.
The academy is so
Whereas
important.
I really couldn't give a shit if the stadium was falling down around me. Yeah. Well, I want these improved training facilities.
Yeah. That's what Damien Duff was saying, wasn't it? Duff was even saying that the same about, obviously, with Shelburne, because they're out in the AUL complex. Like, he would have been there as a kid, as a teenager, even with Ireland. The pitch is almost exactly the same. You have Rovers, Shamrock Rovers, who obviously have a lease out in Rosedown, but wouldn't all facility. You know, Cork, who've been at Bishopstown, have to double check if they actually own that or if that's something that's leased through the Munster FA.
And the worry is that when we're recording episode 5,764 in 20 years' time of this podcast, are the training facilities still exactly
like
the same?
But they literally have to change because if they don't improve, like, it's too excessive to say that the game will die. But Ireland's relevance on the international stage, at least, will die.
But have they improved in the last 20 years, is the point I'm making?
Probably not, but they literally... But they
there's
don't
more
happen
of a will
now.
There now.
But if they don't happen now, like, there's no point trying to do it in 30 years because it won't matter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're not... Like, how many times have we talked about the Brexit thing? We can't send players across anymore. We have to develop our own players. To do that, we have to improve the academy facilities. And, like, clubs running academies, that is an expensive business to run an academy. And, like... You know, some clubs would say they're not getting enough support. They're definitely not getting enough support from the government. But they're not getting enough support from the FAI either, in all fairness. And there are people in the FAI who would acknowledge that. Like.
Well, it was acknowledged by Jonathan Hill after Vera Powell was heard, it was decided not to renew her contract. Mark Cannon, director of football, and Jonathan Hill gave a joint press conference and he laid it out, and the exact, I'm almost certain, I have to double check, it was like 10,000 was given from the FAI to clubs for their academies. But then it was referenced that a club in League 1, League 2 in the UK is getting 1 million.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And they also have a new TV deal coming down the line as well, which is going to see serious money pumped in. That's going to be a different issue we can on episode 3,400 and things. But the reason why as well, and this brings us back why I know, obviously, we're going to record this before the committee, with the Oireachtas committee. There is also going to be another Oireachtas committee in, is it February, when the,
yeah,
this is going to be an interesting one where some of the use of COVID funds has to be discussed. So that's going to be fun. But the reason why it's important is that we're discussing this, but the FAI laid out this plan in June with the facilities document. Like, you were there for that, Gav, and like, I don't know, but like, even if you look at some of the numbers that were involved on that, that's why I think the FAI have at least been bold enough on this, and we're up front, and why the last month I feel has been so damaging is because, as I was saying, they could have been coming in here in a position of power to discuss this, whereas they're on the defensive, whereas they've already laid out, I mentioned it, on some of the grassroots facilities there, but they laid out some of the numbers of what they want in terms of how much money they want and how they want to spread out.
I do think that document is the best thing that the FAI have done this year and maybe in a few years, just because it's so comprehensive. It didn't flinch at the absolute state of the facilities across the country. Like, obviously, one of the great failures, the reason we're in such a mess, is that the previous FAI regime wouldn't admit and wouldn't allow anyone report that things weren't were in the ramshackle state that they were. So they're like, so they acknowledge how bad things are. They want €863 million over 15 years. It's definitely not a vanity project. It's to bring the facilities up to standard. It's not like we're going to be Europe, you know, continent leading in what we have. We're like, the FAI's aim is to get what other countries already have. And that's what, so they want more, just over €500 million from the government over the next 15 years, front loaded, obviously, to the early 5 to 10 years. And then they'll, you know, they'll get others from local authorities, and they're going to set up, they've set up this facility fund to bring in money, and they can, you know, spend money on it themselves. Like, it has to be backed. Like, it absolutely has to be backed. There's no other option. If it doesn't happen again, like, the game will wither and die. I mean, like, sorry, it won't die. It will never die. It will always persist because so many people play the game. But if you want to, if you would look at the health of Irish football through the health of the professional game and how our clubs do in Europe, the general standard of the domestic league, and ultimately how the international team does in international matches and qualify for tournaments, it's not going to happen. Like, I mean, we're the current, like, the, the drawback to the current international team is that we've some very talented players there. But the reason Stephen Kenny didn't work out as Ireland manager is because he couldn't fit them in a system, in a coherent system. There were always gaps in the team. And where are the gaps? They're mostly in midfield and mostly out wide. And we've been spent the last 10, 15 years exporting talent to the UK who have who've fully signed up to the ETPP plan and, like, brought in, like, they've looked at what's worked in Spain, worked in the continent, and they've imported all of that. Obviously, Mark Cannon was involved in this. Mm. This is what's kind of interesting, him working at the FAI now. And, like, look at the players they're producing. Wide forwards, loads of wide forwards, loads of, like, technical midfield players, number eights, effectively. A few, you know, number sixes, but not that many. And what are the players that Ireland are producing? We're producing the players that fill the gaps in those academy teams, those big centre halves. England are low on them. We're high on them. Like, it makes sense. Like, I mean, it's, it won't always scan, but, like, the way we're approaching youth football, you can kind of, you could nearly tell the strengths of the Ireland team by looking what are the weaknesses in the English team. And then obviously vice versa. They're absolutely stacked in the areas that we're deficient in.
And again, like, that's what's, with this part of it, we're talking about the investment, and we're talking about the, say, obviously going to be the Rochester committee, but with that player development plan, which you would think is going to be getting a significant airing of what's actually going to be needed, because that's what Mark Cannon, who's been working on for the last year, on a couple of days, I'd be wondering, Shane, when the FAI did come out in June with this investment plan, first of all, and they kind of laid out, what was your instinct on it in terms of seeing what they actually put forward? Gav said it was the best thing they've done this year, which I would agree with, even in a year, and it wasn't a vanity project in a year when they've been confirmed as hosts for the Euros.
Oh, yeah.
If you ask me, I know. Do you know why? Because I'll be honest, I don't care. I know that sounds great. You were saying there, but you don't care about the stadium. I don't care about Ireland hosting. I'd rather, as you're saying, what could, likewise, I think this today is important in the next couple of days and the fallout is because need to feel as if the FAI have the trust of the government because it's going to be needed.
But like the benefit, just very briefly on your 2028, like the benefit, as the FAI would tell you, and I did believe at the time, is that, you know, this makes it easier for us to go to government and ask for money. Like if we're bringing this big tournament here, we can't have the rest of Europe being like, well, look at the stadiums, lads. You know, so it's a way of bringing the government to the table. And if that works out, then absolutely host Euro 2028. But again, if you're letting yourself down over these little issues around Jonathan Hill's pay, and like it's too easy for people to say, oh, look at the FAI, completely dysfunctional again. That's like, it's just why this whole thing is so frustrating. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, when I saw it the same as Gav, look, you look and you see what they want to do and it's so badly needed. It's incredible, and it would take us pretty much to where we need to get to. But I suppose the problem was I looked at the numbers involved and I just thought it was pie in the sky. I just found it hard to believe that they would get anywhere close to the funding that they're looking for to make it happen. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. Hopefully, obviously, I'll be proven wrong. But, you know, I just didn't feel we were in a very strong position to be able to... We can make the case that we need it.
Yeah.
I don't know how good a position we're in to justify.
But we're also, like, in fairness to the FAI, the country's also kind of rigged against soccer being successful. I mean, obviously, there's historic issues with the GA and the ban and segregation, et cetera, et cetera. But like they brought out, in my opinion, again, made a pretty compelling argument around the betting tax.
Yeah.
They were increased the betting tax. Just we weren't going to take money from anyone, you know. But like talk about frightening the horses. Like, I mean, there was a massive kickback from the horse racing lobby. Mm-hmm. There are certain politicians who kind of went down this very disingenuous route, in my opinion, talking about how it's actually not linked to the betting tax at all. You know, this is just ring fence money. It was just like this. I thought was an attempt to discredit their very legitimate argument. And then there's other issues around the sports capital program that the FAI are going to talk about today. But now, one of the issues, why has so little money, as you pointed out, compared to GA? Like, I mean, since 2000, football has got 19% of all the sports capital grants, and it's the most played sport in the country. Now, part of that is down to the FAI, because under the old regime, there was definitely an impression that everything has to come through us. Don't go off going to government yourself. We'll get this, you know. And then obviously, that certainly helps to cultivate the power of the chief executive, shall we say, if everything has to go through Abbottstown.
One man.
But then, you know, like, I mean, soccer clubs, and it's the same for boxing. You made a great point there about how few own their facilities and actually can't draw down money. There's just not as much money around these clubs. And like you actually, if you want to apply for like a large scale infrastructure fund, you need a lot of seed money. You need like a lot of money in the pot that you're willing to go, like to go to architects to draw things up. Like you have to spend a lot of money to get something to a position where you're ready to apply for the large scale infrastructure fund. And sports like soccer and sports like boxing don't have that level of money, and you can see it reflected in the, like, there was loads of press releases and kind of smiles and handshakes coming out of the Department of Sport a couple of, like, last week when they announced this top up for the large scale infrastructure funds. I mean, 15 million of the 36 went to the projects for the RDS and the sports ground, the Leinster and Connacht rugby stadiums. The only football project that got anything was Finn Harps, and they only got a fraction of what they asked for.
And on top of that, and like I realise this is, will sound elitist, and it's absolutely not. It's just the reality that I see. Again, if I look at the setups around me, like the local architect, the local engineer, the town lawyer, making this sound like the Hickville here.
In fairness, that's going to be some dinner dance all the same. That is going to be some dinner dance.
Do you know the bank manager? Like all of these people are members of our GEA club at home.
Yeah.
None of them are members of our soccer club at home, and it requires a huge amount of brain power and smarts and
just understanding the system
to understand how to. Put one of these applications together, because it's a massive, massive body of work. And I think that's where...
And it's also
again,
like... And then
how
this,
can we be helped on the football side to get over the line with
and
these
And this, again, like we've gone a bit... Maybe this bit off topic, maybe it's just too broad, but that, like it's very easy to become a member of your GAA club, because it's just that it's according to parish. Like, I mean, it's such a simplistic, brilliant idea, you know, like, and now like the GA club remains like that is the community, like you're a member of the GA club because you're a member of the community. Soccer, I don't think quite has that, you know, because 100%. Everything is so fractured. There's so many different affiliate bodies, so many different fucking leagues. Like, why are there so many different fucking leagues? Like, there's way too many. So I think again, you know, like Dan McDonald has this line that if you were to design Irish football, the entire architecture from this morning, you definitely wouldn't design it as it's currently set up.
Nowhere close.
with the player development plan, because that's something that I don't know if, I'm guessing he won't, because I don't think Mark Hannum is going to be there this afternoon. He won't, I guess he's like, is he going
to? I don't think so, no. I don't think he's due to.
So, like, that's something that he still has to properly roll out in terms of laying that out. Like, if you're thinking, I don't know if you have any insight into this, Gavin, I can go to you for Shane if you want, but like, where in terms of the, we can't talk, I don't, we don't know what we're, where the FA are going to be at in terms of these projects, because they said what is it, 2,500 projects over 15 years, and you mentioned the Gabo front loaded 300, and they want just shy of 380 million in year 1 to 5. So that is clear that they want to do things very, very quickly. What's the priority here? This player development plan. I told you the questions are going to be easy. I said that.
Yeah, nice handy.
Like, nice and broad. This is Ronald's fault. He said state of the nation, and it's in a fucking state.
Look, it's a fairly broad answer from me, I suppose, but I just, from my vantage point, we need a proper coaches structure. Like,
how does it work at the moment? Can you explain that? Because, like, I know coaches, like, I don't know where you did, but who are working in the Premier League, but they've done their badges, even though they're Irish, have done their badges in the, with either the Scottish FA or the Northern Irish FA.
How
in terms of people understanding what is the structure? How does the coaching pyramid? How does it work? How, like, even from the bottom up? Like,
well, I'm less so talking about the coach education or whether somebody does their badges.
So
here,
you're thinking
there.
Grassroots.
I'm talking about I'm probably talking about. We need to get the grassroots bit right for as well, right? But let me go to the level above that. So at League of Ireland level, like, I suppose the comparison that I kind of make is obviously the role that I'm in now as my full-time job, right? As of January, middle of January next month, right? We will have the Laois development team will have 11 full-time staff on the ground in Laois driving GAA activity in County Laois. Okay, there's one full-time football person who's tasked with driving football in Laois. I mean,
and that's just like, not
how how does she compete?
Yeah.
How does she compete in terms of hearts, minds, hours put into things? You know, we need more full-time staff at all levels.
And that ties in with the point you made earlier about just staff getting demoralised, because you probably see that, like, also burnout.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you're talking with that person, she's obviously, you can imagine working all the hours in the day, possibly has another job, I don't know. You know, you never know, I don't know. But, like, you know what I mean? It just got,
so you just need money. You know, I mean, we need a whole load.
Money is the problem with everything here, because all the things that we want, and no matter what angle, no matter what answer I give to that question,
This is where I think the FAI are probably right to focus on facilities, though. I think if you start building, because they have this thing, like, they have, like, the League of Ireland is very popular at the moment. Like, they have 43,000 at the cup final, but they're going to make the point today in the Oireachtas committee that actually we don't have the facilities for 43,000 people to go to 10 League of Ireland games on the same night across two divisions on a Friday night.
And that ties in, because on that, they've said the FAI want every League of Ireland club to have a minimum of a 4,000 capacity stadium, with 10 in the 10 to 20,000 bracket and 10 accommodating up to 6,000, and they want each club to have their own academy and training ground with 140 million devoted to that area.
Yeah, but like, if you start building facilities, then you kind of get more people through the gates. The FAI's theory is that allows them then to sell a broadcast deal. Like, it's ourselves and I think it's Kazakhstan are the only two countries in Europe making no money out of a TV deal. Like, apparently Sky Sports were interested in, kind of, there were talks held with Sky around the League of Ireland, but they walked away, and Mark Scanlon, like, told us in the media subsequently that it's just facilities, man. Like, I mean, there's just not proper facilities there to easily broadcast games, and some of them don't look good on TV. And look at the list of the games that have been on Virgin and on an RTE this year, majority from Tala. And it's not because they always want to show Shamrock Rovers, it's that there are some grounds that just can't do live broadcast.
Where look,
it's only when, like, you go there and you
look
shy.
Like,
you go
Drogheda, no games on TV from Drogheda. And, like, I know Drogheda are quite, and with some reason, like, they had this brilliant season under Kevin Doherty, and feel like they haven't got the acknowledgement and respect, you know, in terms of award seasons and just various kind of elements of praise post-season. But, like, unless you're a Drogheda fan and you're kind of streaming LOI TV, you're not seeing their games because they're not on TV, because the ground is not in as good a nick, you know. So I think probably it's such a long-term thing, but if you build facilities and create enough room for people to come and spend their money and then allow it to cascade down. That's probably your best bet, but bloody hell, it's a long road.
It is. And look, like it should be remarked upon, though, at the same time, that even though it might not seem it when we look at results at the top level of our international teams, sometimes we have come a long way. We actually have come a long way from somebody who saw where we were at. I would say I kind of based this off two or three people in my mind, 28, 29. So when they were 13, 14, so 15 years, right? Aye. Like it was perfect. It was commonplace only 15 years ago that unless you were within an hour's radius of Dublin or an hour's radius of Cork, it didn't matter how good of a soccer player you were. You were going to go unnoticed. You were going to go unnoticed. The old joke used to be that Finney Butler didn't have to drive past the red cow to pick the Irish international soccer team. Do you know?
Finney Butler being Belvedere, Maestro.
Former Irish underage guru for a long, long, long time. And it was true. It was absolutely true. The only way to become a professional footballer was to get yourself to a Dublin club, or maybe they might be able to do something for you down in Cork. Like, that landscape is now completely and utterly changed.
Should always like, Benny being an example who's come up
everywhere, right around the country. There's Egan. A very clear, you know, kind of pathway. As I say, even with my own small little club, with Clover United, right? If you're a talented 11-year-old, you will progress from the local club onto the league development squad, and you'll maybe play with them at 12 and 13, and then at 14 you will sign for CK United, Carrick Kilkenny United, or maybe Waterford United might be within your catchment area, or maybe Athlone or Treaty, you know, are all kind of all an hour from where I would live in Laois. And once you're into that, now it kicks on from there. So there has, and actually to go backwards, what the biggest change, and I know I've referenced it once or twice here, was it Kuverman's or Doctor? I think it was Kuverman's. Was it Kuverman's or Doctor? The managing to get it over the line that the League of Ireland clubs were going to actually run underage football.
Yeah. That was Doctor, yeah.
That was Doctor. And
which Vinnie Butler
lost against. I'm also loath to say it, game. But it was also kind of John Delaney.
Explain.
Did he?
Well, I mean, you know, he
was there
certainly,
when it happened.
He was there when it happened, and he did a certain political power, shall we call it, across Irish football.
Yeah. It would have been at pains, though, I would think, to have expressed to local clubs that this was not his doing.
But in terms of, I don't know. Well,
okay, fair enough then. I can't argue with that.
But there was like one of the reports, I was just double checking the number there. So it was like, where are we here now? So I think actually the Irish Independent reported this back in February, was that Luton Town, who are obviously now a Premier League club, which you'd expect, that they have 24 full-time staff and between 25 to 30 operating in a part-time capacity for their academy. Whereas if you look around the League of Ireland, it is another, there obviously are full-time staff within them, but it's largely volunteers. So in terms of,
it would be
player,
zero at Cove.
Well, yeah, but in terms of, so in terms of this player development plan, like what ABC, what are the priorities, or what should be, I know we're talking about money and all the rest of it, but in terms of what would need to be happening with that player development plan to actually, from a League of Ireland perspective, because let's be honest, there it's going to be the League of Ireland now who we're going to have players coming through who will be in the international team. It's going to be in the next 10, 12 years, or maybe 20 years, that there probably won't be one player in that international squad who hasn't been involved in the League of Ireland.
Well, look, if you're looking for something very
specific... Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
If you're looking for something very specific and just straight to it, I would say 30 grand to each club to fund their academy manager. Each League of Ireland club, 20 League of Ireland clubs, 30 grand to each League of Ireland club. And if 30 grand covers that person's salary in full, brilliant. It probably would do at somewhere like Cove.
Yeah.
If the club needs to go and put another 30 to it to make it 60 because there's so much involved that the likes of a Pats or a Rover, so be it, they go and do that. But there needs, at League of Ireland level, there needs to be one person, and this is their full-time job.
Yeah.
They spend every minute of every day trying to figure out how can they drive on the underage development at their club.
There was an interesting report by UEFA this year, like a kind of an overview of what happens at all top division clubs in the domestic leagues in Europe. And the average across all 55 countries in Europe at a top division in the top tier of that division, each of those clubs averages between 5 and 7 full-time academy coaches. In Ireland, it's between 0 and 1.
Yeah.
So Greece, like, take Greece for example.
Closer to 0 than 1, I would have
seven,
thought.
Has 7, an average of 7 full-time academy coaches per top division club. We have between 0 and 1. You know, it's probably 0 at a few, as you say. And, like, no wonder they're fucking beating us home and away. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I mean, this is... I know, like, people... Like, people largely experience and feel about Irish football through the men's senior international team. It's all linked, like, you know? Yeah. I mean, and sadly, we spent way too long talking about them as different things and making the most important person in Irish football the senior manager. Whereas, no, like, they're not the most important person. They're the most high profile. And this is what I hope the FAI do with their recruitment. I hope that they don't go for some commercial reason. I really hope they don't do that.
In terms of the manager?
Yeah, I really hope. Like,
but that's even the sense, even you're going to get in that, not that there's loggerheads, but there could be a divergence of opinion now.
Yeah.
Between the person who's going and doing this, making this decision, who was director of football, Mark Hannum, who was talking about yesterday, the head coach, but then also other people there saying, well, it goes back to the old thing of we need someone who's going to create headlines.
Yeah. And
we can discuss that in part 2, which I think could be a good place to leave part 1.
Yeah.
Sounds good.